The shadow stormed toward him in sheer fury, ready to rip his body into pieces and chum him across the waters. Heart tumbling like a boulder down a hill, Blaze held his position, concentrating on the golden stream as it made its ponderous way toward Dante. The nether closed on Blaze. He could duck into the shadows and let it pass by, but he thought if he did that, he'd lose control of the stream. He could probably generate more, assuming he could buy a few seconds to conjure it up without Dante converting him to skewered meat minus the skewers. But he wasn't sure how many more times he could wield it. He was already feeling shakier than when he'd practiced it on Gladick, and that shakiness wasn't all due to nerves. The only way to come out of it alive was to trust in Gladick. The shadows screamed onward, blotting out the sun, and were met with the starry whiteness of ether. The flash dazzled Blaze, yet somehow he could still see the pieces of stream as they landed on Dante's transformed skin and sank inside him. A galaxy of nether shot from Dante's body. Blaze threw his hands in front of his face, expecting to be annihilated. But the shadows weren't moving. Rather, they were connections between Dante and the nether, exposed by the stream. A few lines of ether extended from him as well, sickly small in comparison. None of the ethereal strings looked anything like the column of pearl Blaze had seen within Gladick. He maneuvered around the outermost layers of shadow, groping inward. The darkness surrounded him completely, interrupted here and there by a spindly thread of light. He reached what he knew was the center, and ground to a halt, cold sweat popping across his skin. "His remnant," Blaze choked. "It isn't there!" Lost in his search, he hadn't noticed that Dante and Gladick were busy wailing away at each other with everything they had. Nether and ether exploded in constellations of destruction, twinkling away into nothing, only to be replaced by another clash of magic a moment later. Such fights tended to sound like sizzling beef, but this one boomed like winter waves. "Of course the remnant isn't there, you dung-brained ape!" Gladick sneered. "That is precisely what we are here to fix!" "Just testing you," Blaze said. "Good news, you passed." He swung back into the surreal vision of the Odyssean. Black spokes and angled walls jutted from Dante. Blaze threaded his way back to the center, where a vertical emptiness occupied Dante's core. It was like the shadow of a shadow, or perhaps more like the gap of a board missing from a fence. Even if you'd never seen the fence before, or for that matter knew what a fence was, you could still look at it and see at once that something was gone. Blaze gathered his remaining stream, which had dwindled as he'd been searching, and sent it to the place where the remnant should be. Gold shimmered up and down, as though coating a tube of glass so perfectly wrought that it couldn't be seen. A charge ran back to Blaze's body with a jolt. He pulled back from the sight of the Odyssean. Gladick took two steps ahead of him, gesturing madly with his one arm as he held off Dante's ceaseless assaults. Blaze had spent the last of his stream connecting himself to Dante, but he needed more to tie himself to the Abba Coen. Feeling quite insane to be daydreaming in the midst of a pitched battle, he closed his eyes, returning to the valley in the mountains. This time, he saw that it was spring, and the children were catching frogs by the pond and making them race each other in the patch of bare dirt behind the house. Two victories later, one by a bright green frog and the other by a toad named Bumps, a ring of golden chips circled in front of Blaze. He opened the front of his jabat and withdrew the abaquen. It was slippery with sweat. The clash of sorcery slowed to a minor skirmish. Dante smiled bleakly, gaze shifting to the swamp behind them. Took them long enough. There, the heads and shoulders of the blighted emerged from the surface. The former people ignored the water streaming down their water-wrinkled faces, gnashing their teeth and splashing forward. Blaze stuffed the statue in his jabat and drew his swords. No! Gladick showered the foremost of the blighted with nether, knocking their corpses back into the water, then spun to deflect Dante's latest attack, which had come so close that the sparks of its negation bounced against Gladick's face. You must complete the task! Blaze backed away from the banks, Gladick paralleling him. Despite Gladick's frantic culling, there were already 30 blighted taking their first steps on shore, with more arising from the swamp behind them. Dante hurled another wave of shadows at Gladick. The old priest grimaced, laying into the nether with radiant spears. He pushed back the assault, but had no attention left for the coming blighted. Blaze could hold them off, probably, but it would stall his progress. The stream he'd just brought forth would vanish. There was no right answer. Yet he knew that indecision had killed more people than plague. He sheathed his swords and withdrew the abaquen. Marshalling the stream, he sent a line of it between himself and the ivory statue. The gecko's eyes glowed gold. A pin pricked Blaze's core. Dante winced, reaching for his solar plexus. Blaze lifted the abaquen, waiting for it to do its thing. It rested in his hands like the inert lump of old bone that it was. Blaze shook it. Nothing happened. His mouth went dry. Beck had made it sound like... Dante spun a column of shadows directly at Blaze's head. Still retreating from the blighted, Gladick countered with an inelegant but equally sized column of light. As soon as the ether left his hand, Gladick whirled back toward the blighted. The first of them had already launched itself at the old man. It crashed into him, knocking him down and biting at his throat, nails gouging into the side of Gladick's ribs. Gladick punched a spike of nether through the blighted skull, producing a fountain of brains that were as pale as the blighted's exteriors. Gladick staggered to his feet, de-braining four more of the things before turning to meet Dante's latest attack. The leading edge of the nether pierced Gladick's chest. He yelled out, clubbing it aside with a truncheon of raw ether. The abaquen still hadn't done anything. Blaze stared at it dumbly, ready to bash his own brains out with it. Had he screwed something up? Had Beck left something out? With no other option, he sent the last of his stream into the abaquen. This time, as the pinprick jabbed his middle, he homed in on the feeling, and found that it brought him straight to the pillar of pearl that resided in his core. There, a golden tether extended from the pillar to Dante. Blaze opened his remnant. Ether poured from him and into Dante. 18. Light streamed between them. Dante watched as the ether entered his body just below his ribs. He looked up and smiled, blue eyes twinkling. This is how you said the Odosain cure the blight, isn't it? I don't feel a thing. What if your little scheme doesn't work on liches? Then you'll have to excuse us for the remainder of this battle, Blaze said, as we'll need to go register a formal complaint at the Silent Spires for their sorcerous malpractice. What do you say? I think you're trying to distract me from finishing this. Dante shifted his focus to Gladick, who had seized on the momentary pause to lay waste to the closest blighted, opening a wide circle around himself. Dante lifted his hand. Nether coalesced around his fingers, undulating like black fire. Blazer's heart collided with his stomach. He'd done everything that he was supposed to. More than that, he was only supposed to have provided cover for Beck, not execute the process himself. And he'd still failed. Then again, there was something comforting in that, wasn't there? He would die knowing that he had done everything. And when he emerged from the haze of the past lands and into the mists, there would be nothing left that he'd have to make peace with. Best of all, he'd be away from the reach of the White Lich, wouldn't he? He could find Min then. He doubted you could have children in the mists. But they could still find their mountain valley, build their cabin in it, and live together until it was time to move on. The nether sputtered from Dante's fingers. Rather than searing toward Gladik, it flapped away in confusion. Blaze felt Dante calling to the shadows, but the nether stopped a few feet from his outstretched hands, circling him as though it was wary.
"What?" Dante said. "Have you done?"
His face writhed as if worms crawled beneath his skin. His head snapped backward. His fingers twisted into claws, bending at impossible angles. The cord of ether running between them brightened steadily. Drool leaked from the corner of Dante's mouth. He staggered to his right, clutching at his heart. Patches of green appeared on his salt-white skin, creeping across his face and arms like living things. He straightened and faced Blaze, jaw hanging slackly, blood and spit spilling from his mouth.
"You..."
He convulsed, fell to his knees, and vomited. At first it was red, but the next heaves were green, and the ones after that, as black as nether. Dante fell to his side. His eyes were open, and the pale blue brightness had left them. But his glassy grey eyes didn't seem to see anything at all. The vision had always been the same. The city lay beneath him like a map, its silver towers and golden domes gleaming redly as the sun broke from behind the mountain and spilled across all of creation. Snow still rested on the gardens and trees, but there was a note of warmth in the air that suggested it would soon retreat to the heights of the mountain. The people below seemed to sense this, moving about the streets with impatient readiness, smoke chuffing from bakeries and inns, the citizens yearning to return to work on the most beautiful city Dante had ever seen. Wind gushed over him, rippling his robes. He was flying. This wasn't unusual. In the clean paved streets, those who saw him dropped to their knees and lowered their heads. He banked to his right, gaining elevation, the ether shining upon him just as the sun did, while the nether flowed through him like the wind of his flight. The tower stood against the sky like an upthrust fist. If he'd wanted, the lich could have made it as tall as the mountain, but he decided to restrict it to 2,000 feet, largely so that human servants and dignitaries could walk about on its terraces and roofs without freezing to death or being flung off by raging winds. Dante cleared the rooftop, pulled upward and stalled, lowering gently until his soles touched the silver-veined marble. The Aedan Rane waited impassively, watching the city react to the gift of dawn. In an earlier time, the Lich also would have been hurrying off to the day's labor, but he hadn't had to do any serious work in many years. Instead, he passed much of his time there on the roof, watching the people engage in his creation.
Dante had never known if he was observing it for flaws, or enjoying the clockwork precision of his work. Knowing the Lich, it was probably both. The Lich didn't turn his head.
Sorcerer, are you ready?
Dante moved to his side. It is my honor, my master.
Walk with me, and receive your destiny.
The portal stood 20 feet high, iron double doors inscribed with blackened runes. There was nothing on the other side. The Aedan Rane lifted his heavy hand. It glowed. Then the runes did, too. With a groan like music, the doors opened.
Light of all colors poured forth. For a moment, Dante remembered what it had felt like to be afraid.
The Aedan Rane strode into the light, and Dante followed. The light faded. The tower was gone. They stood on a staircase into the stars. They ascended. Everything was perfectly silent, except for the rasp of their feet on the treads, and a low hum that came from everywhere and nowhere. With each step Dante took, a memory flashed through his mind. The taking of Tanara Tain, the Battle of the Dundons, when the sorcerers of the Northern Kingdoms made their great stand and died to the last. The union of the world that followed as the last human fell and rose again as blighted. The long reward when the blighted were given the run of the world for their service. Finally, the death of the last blighted and the ceremony of the Second Age, when the Lich brought forth the first of his new humans. The founding of the City of Heavens, the raising of the 31 towers, the spread of the people across their new home until every land was filled. The perfect peace that knew no struggle nor war. The final quest, when the Aedan Rane and each of his underlords worked to unlock the last secret, and Dante delivered it from the beyond. The crafting of the Starward Gate, and, at last, its opening. The staircase seemed to go on forever, but Dante now understood that time was an illusion. A platform took shape ahead. The Aedan Rane didn't increase his pace. He didn't need to. Together they ascended the platform. There, the gods awaited. Dante lifted his eyes to them. Everything went white. That was where the vision had always ended. This time, the whiteness cleared. The platform was empty. The gods were gone. Dante turned to the Aedan Rane. The Lich was already half transparent. As he disappeared, he shook his head and turned away. Nausea spread through Dante's belly. It had been so long since he had felt any pain that the sensation paralyzed him. He retched. The convulsion sent hair fine cracks racing across his skin. He fell to his knees. Glowing blue-white liquid dripped from the cracks in his body, spattering the platform. As the droplets landed, the light within them dimmed away to nothing. He whirled and ran toward the stairs to the portal. But as he planted his foot, his ankle snapped. He pitched forward, landing on his elbows and knees, which crunched like chalk. His once smooth skin dangled from his body
in mummified strips. He reached out to the nether. It flickered, drifting toward him, then returned to its crevices, watching in judgment as the gift was stolen from him, and his body succumbed to the thousands of years that he'd defied nature's law. His ears roared, his sight blurred. He thought that was from the intolerable pain, but it was, in fact, the result of his eyes sinking into their sockets and dehydrating into black lumps. He reached out in agony, leaving a trail of fingers across the platform. His arm shook and fell. He needed to breathe, but he didn't have the strength to expand his chest. He knew what it was to die. And to be born. Dante! Blaze tried to run toward the prone figure, but his legs wobbled beneath him. He half sat and half fell, laughing dumbly for reasons he couldn't have explained. His head buzzed, the sound vacillating in and out, but growing steadily louder. Something white and glowy was extending from his belly, looking like some sort of celestial worm. Ah, yes. The channel between them was still open, and it was busy draining ether from himself and feeding it to Dante. He thought that he should shut it off. It seemed to him that if he lost all his remnant, he'd either turn blighted himself, or maybe just die. But he didn't seem to have any idea in hell how to do that. He decided to sit there and see if any answers appeared. 10 seconds later, with the cord starting to dim, Blaze couldn't remember why he was frowning, or why he was sitting down, other than the fact that it was very comfortable. That was probably why, wasn't it? That it was so comfy. A figure swayed in front of him, pale and long-limbed. Its face and chest were slathered in blood. Blaze squinted, mouth hanging open. Was he about to get eaten by a blighted? That didn't seem like the most fun experience in the world. On the other hand, avoiding that fate would require standing up, which he didn't think he'd want to do, even if he knew how. Blaze! The figure yelled. The connection remains open! You must close it! But what? The figure, who Blaze was starting to believe, might not be a blighted after all, drew back its hand and slapped him across the face. He touched his cheek. What's that for, you son of a bastard? Close the connection before you lose yourself. Sever the stream. The connection? The stream? Blaze scowled down at the statue with the lizard and bones that he clutched in his hands. He reached toward the golden thread connecting him to the Abaquen. This felt like trying to run through chest-deep water. He swore at it, thinking that might help. Either it did, or he'd been right about to get to it anyway, because his mind grasped the thread. He yanked as hard as he could. The tie snapped with only the faintest resistance. If he'd been breaking a strand in the physical world rather than within the loony sorceress one, he would have gone stumbling backwards. The buzzing faded. Blaze glanced about himself, pulse racing, soggy with fresh sweat. Bodies of the blighted were strewn all over the place. Most had been killed with precision strikes, but others had been knocked into gory pieces, as if they'd gotten too close, requiring Gladik to hit them with awkward sledgehammers of nether. Which explained why Gladik was such a great big bloody mess. Blaze scrabbled to his feet, gawking wild-eyed at the old priest. I was about to lose the last of it. It had me so addle-pated that I didn't even understand what was happening. I think you just saved my life. Gladik nodded and tried to say something, but coughed instead, spitting blood down the front of his jabat. Blaze rocked back a step, then ran forward just in time to catch him as he fainted. Gladick was covered in bites and gashes, and awash in blood that Blaze had mistaken for the Blighted's.
Gladick! Wake up, you idiot! Wake up and heal yourself!
The old man lolled limply. Across from them, Dante lay next to his pools of multi-hued vomit. His eyes were still open. Blaze couldn't tell if he was dead, but Gladick was certainly about to be. Blaze lowered the priest to the ground and ran to Dante. He shook his shoulder, gently at first, then savagely. Just as Blaze was about to scream, Dante's eyes popped open.
"Can you hear me?" Blaze said. "Are you in there?"
Dante's eyes roved from side to side.
"I don't know."
"Do you know who I am? Do you know who you are?"
"I don't know."
Blaze covered his face with his hands.
"You can remember who you are later. Gladick's about to die, unless you get up and heal him."
Dante looked at him blankly, then at Gladick and the blood weeping from his wounds into the grass. Dante planted a palm on the ground and shoved himself to his feet. He tottered over to Gladick, shadows wrapping around his hands. As soon as they touched him, he stopped, taking a deep breath. He rolled his shoulders. He turned and smiled at Blaze.
"There I am."
Dante crouched next to Gladick, steadying himself with one hand. Nether surged into the unconscious priest, eddying over his countless wounds. The bleeding slowed. The worst bite, a chunk taken from the side of Gladick's neck, filled in layer by layer until it was replaced with smooth skin, much pinker than the tanned parts surrounding it. One by one, the other wounds followed suit. The nether grew shakier and shakier in Dante's hands. Eventually, he flopped on his rear, back, hunched. Blaze stood over Gladick.
"Is he alive?"
"Yeah."
Dante gazed down at himself. His jabot was smeared with vomit and blood.
"Am I?"
"Yes.
Sorry about that."
"There are more Blighted coming. They'll be here any minute and I'm nearly out of nether. We have to get out of here."
Blaze sighed.
"And I thought I'd finally be able to rest for a while."
He went to the canoe and beached it directly across from Gladick, stashing the Aberquen inside. Dante tried to help Blaze carry the old man to the boat, but immediately dropped Gladick's feet and ran off to vomit in the grass. Blaze leveraged Gladick over the gunwale and settled him inside. This done, he gave Dante a hand getting in, then picked up the paddle and headed east-northeast, away from both the hell-painted hills and the direction Dante said the Blighted were coming from.
"If you're gonna barf again," Blaze said, "please do it over the side, would you? If you add scrub the upchuck from the bottom of a canoe to the list of things I've had to do today, I swear to the gods I'll deliver her straight to the White Lich."
Dante nodded weakly. He was ashen and shaky, and Blaze wasn't sure if he looked better or worse than when he'd woken up 10 minutes earlier. But he was human again. That was what Blaze chose to focus on, as he conveyed them away from the hell-painted hills and into the overgrown clamor of the swamp. Dante kept glancing behind them. Either he had so little nether left at hand that he didn't want to waste it on his insect scouts, or he was too rattled to think of it.
"So the last couple of weeks were terrible," Blaze said, once he was reasonably sure they weren't about to be set upon by hidden foes. "Rather than allowing you to simply take my word for it, I'm now going to inflict the experience on you as well."
He launched into a lengthy recap of everything he, Naren, Gladick, and the late Beck had done since Dante had been taken by the White Lich. deliberately including more detail than was strictly necessary, in part to fill the time, and in part to help remind Dante that he was back among them. He spent a particularly long time on the heist of the Bastion, which had almost been fun in its way. Despite that, Dante didn't ask a single question, or so much as laugh, gazing instead out into the swamp. "All for a little statue of a lizard," Blay said. "You'd think they'd make a weapon like this more fearsome looking. I'd have gone with a shark swinging a battle axe." He paddled along, splashing softly. Behind him, Dante shifted his weight. "Then what happened?"
"We headed your way," Blay said. "Personally, I thought it was the perfect opportunity to finally be rid of you. But Gladick thought it wouldn't be fair if we had to fight the White Lich and you didn't."
He finished up the tale of the last few days of travel between Darabode and the fight at the base of the hail-painted hills. It didn't take much longer. After that, they were both quiet.
"I think we've gone far enough," Dante said, once the afternoon had passed its peak heat. "The Blighted would take days to find us on their own."
"If it means I can stop paddling, I'd agree with you if you told me the sky was orange polka dots."
Blaze brought them aground on the nearest island that looked large enough to offer concealment. They dragged the canoe toward the reeds. Blaze picked up Gladick while Dante grabbed their gear. The old man was still out cold, his skin mottled with the light pink patches where he'd been healed. Blaze found a grassy spot near the center of the island. Dante flapped out a blanket, and Blaze set Gladick down. Dante crouched next to the priest, a few shadows flickering around his hand. Blaze moved a step closer.
"He all right?"
"He exhausted himself in the battle. He needs sleep, that's all."
Dante didn't look up.
"Do you still want him dead?"
"Do I want him dead?"
"You heard me."
"Should I have transferred part of my brain to you as well? I'm the one who woke you up to stop him from bleeding out."
"That's what's confusing me. Because when you threw him off the tower at Erisosis, I assume it wasn't to give him a dose of fresh air."
Heat prickled over Blaze's skin. He'd almost convinced himself that night had been nothing more than a drunken dream. Even now he wanted to deny it. But when you lied to yourself, you only made yourself weaker. When you came face to face with something about yourself that made you feel weak or scared, you stared it down, and you walked through it. And that was how you made sure you'd never have to face it again.
"How did you know?"
"You were out drinking at the docks," Dante said. "Naren was only a couple of islands away. Almost half a mile closer to the scene than you were. There was no way you could have heard about what happened before he did. Yet the two of you showed up together. Because you didn't need to be told."
"Maybe I'd had enough to drink and was on my way back to bed. Then again, I bet you already know that I beat Naren to the tower and waited for him to arrive before heading upstairs. I thought it'd look less suspicious if I didn't show up alone."
Blaze plucked a tall blade of grass, tearing it apart piece by piece.
"He'd hurt so many people. He'd always gotten away with it. After he hurt Volo, something inside me snapped.
I know why you did it. I want to know if you still want to see justice done to him."
"If I asked you to, you'd do it,"
Spike him right now.
Yes. Blaze got to his feet, turning his back to them.
Leave him be.
Why?
Because without him, you wouldn't be here.
This has all been so strange, Dante said.
Typically, pressures like the ones we've been under break people, warp them into awful shapes.
But maybe it can squeeze you into something stronger.
Blaze shook his head, then laughed. I'm too tired to guess. Not if I'm going to take first watch anyway.
Dante put up a brief fight about handling the watch himself, but Blaze rejected each argument. Although there was still plenty of light, Dante fell asleep in less than a minute. Blaze waited by the camp for a while longer, then began a small circuit of the island. His head throbbed flatly. It felt like his mind would snap if he tried to think, so he didn't. He and Dante traded watches every 2 to 3 hours. By the middle of the night, Blaze was starting to feel normal again. The next time Dante shook him awake, Gladick stirred, mumbled blearily, and opened his eyes.
Told you he'd live, Dante said.
There goes another 10 chucks, Blaze said. I knew I should have smothered him in his sleep.
Gladick blinked owlishly, then chuckled in wonder.
I am intact.
If your definition includes being so old that you season your rocks with dirt, then sure, you are perfectly intact.
And everyone else is as well.
We're not old. We are young, or close enough to it to continue to pretend. And one of us has a physique that makes statues gossip jealously to each other in the back garden.
I can see that you are unharmed, and have possibly located a long-lost supply of bottled spirits. Dante, are you recovered?
I've felt better, Dante said, including after I've been repeatedly stabbed. But I'm here again.
Gladick laughed and smacked his knee with his left hand.
Perhaps the gods do not hate us after all. Or perhaps they find the world a more interesting place to observe when you are free to sow chaos across it. Whatever their motives, this is a miracle.
Blaze told me everything you guys had to go through. I suppose I should thank you.
One might consider our motives entirely selfish, as without your presence, we would be considerably more likely to die at the hands of the Aedan Rane.
Gladick sat up more fully, taking in the warm night and the stars peeping through the boughs.
Life is without any logic at all, is it? 6 months ago, I would have given up my right arm voluntarily, if it had allowed me the chance to spit on your corpse. And now I see you are alive, and I appear to be happy.
Blaze joined the others in laughing at that.
It was still dark out, and would remain so for another 2 hours. But they'd been sleeping since late afternoon, longer in Gladick's case, and seemed awake enough. They ate some dried fish and bananas, which no longer seemed remotely exotic to Blaze.
We don't have anything left, do we?
Dante flipped an empty peel into the brush.
The Lich knows how to combat the Odosein now. That was the only way we had to get to the prime body without being annihilated.
Blaze motioned toward the bag where he'd stashed the statue.
What about the Aberquen? Can we use that to de-lich him?
I spoke with the Lich after you ran away. He was utterly unconcerned about the Abaquen's ability to harm him. He seemed to find the very idea funny.
So, we've lost our only way to hit back at him, and he's become stronger than ever. Well, that just means the songs they'll wind up singing about us will be even better.
Before any such songs can be composed, Gladick said. What is our next move?
Dante shrugged.
We go back to the Silent Spires.
To do what? Complete our education in the Odyssean? You just said that it was now worthless.
Against the Lich it is. We're not going there to learn the Odyssean. We're going there to warn them, and to get Naren and Volo, if she's well. And then we're going to leave Tanaritain.
Silence hung between them like a dark doorway.
Lay said. We are. The Drakebane was right to leave this place. We'll follow his lead.
Gladick pounded his leg with his fist.
The Drakebane was a coward and a deserter.
But he knew this land was doomed. We found an avenue to victory he didn't know about, but we took our shot and we missed. Now the White Lich has taken Aerososis. That doubled his army. It likely doubled his personal power, too. It's time to pull out.
You have spoken with the Aedan Rane many times. You must understand that withdrawing from Tanaritain does nothing to protect us. Once he consolidates his homeland, he will strike out for the next nation. Perhaps he will go to the south, but perhaps he will come for Alebolgia, and then Colin, then Malin, then everything. I know all of that, and more. I spent 2 weeks taking his orders. That's why I'm going to murder him myself.
Gladick arched his left eyebrow.
Then you do have a plan to defeat him.
I don't have any god's damn idea how to do that.
After serving under him, and listening to him talk, I'm not sure it can be done. But I know we can't fight him here any longer. Tanaritain is too wild for us, but it's his home turf, and he's about to control every corner of it. It's time to fall back to somewhere that we can defend.
There is reason in this. Yet, if we cede this land, does it mean we've achieved nothing here? We bought ourselves time. Nethermancers from Narashtavik are already crossing through Malin. We can meet up with them there.
And it isn't just us. We've given places like Malin and Pocket Cove more time to prepare, too. Without us hampering the Lich's every move, he would have swept through Tanaritain 10 weeks ago, and gone on to overrun Bressel.
We did more than that, Lay said. We proved that we can stand against the White Lich and walk away with our lives. We'll do it again, and the next time, we'll win.
Gladick lowered his head. Then we will return to the Silent Spires, and pray that the gods will forgive us what we do next.
The three of them returned to the spot where they'd arranged to meet the Odyssean on their return. Dante was scouting the way ahead with his dragonflies, and hence knew before they arrived at the rendezvous that no one from the spires was waiting for them. But his scouts had also seen that the Blighted had apparently spotted their boat, and were also converging on the rendezvous. Low on options, they ditched their canoe, and hiked once again into the hell-painted hills.
Blay spent most of the day's trek bitching about the heat and spitting out ideas about how to harry, slow, wound, hamper, push back, and otherwise resist the White Lich and his forces. He knew that most of his ideas weren't very good, but he lobbed them out there, with the express purpose of seeing if anyone else could pick them up and do better. And was disappointed when Dante barely responded to them at all, and in fact seemed irritated that Blaze was even trying. Gladick picked up and kicked around a few of his suggestions, but Blaze quit by afternoon, marching over the uneven ground, and wishing for the spires to appear, even though he knew they were more than a day away. Had they accomplished anything in Tanaratain? At best, they'd learned a little about the Lich, but they hadn't actually hurt him, had they? Had it been worth it to slow down his progress, in exchange for all the lives lost along the way? Around one that afternoon, a team of Lon Haba emerged from the hill ahead. In the heat of summer, the oversized goats stank fiercely, but Blaze's spirits lifted the instant he took the saddle. They rode hard, climbing from rock to rock, pushing past sunset, after which Gladick lit the way with floating globes of ether. Around the same time Blaze's stomach was starting to do some serious complaining, they navigated the final ridge and looked down on the green valley of the Silent Spires. Servants met them at the border between the dead rock and the living grass. The staff barely exchanged four words with the Lon Haba mounted guides before turning around and running back to the towers. Blaze and the others came to the plaza and dismounted. Footsteps dashed across the half-lit square. Aira ran forward, her robe pulling back from one of her legs. "You're alive!" She rushed forward, embracing Dante. She detached herself and hugged Blaze and Gladick in turn. "Don't look at me like that. When the two of you left, I thought I'd never catch sight of your hides again. Unless the Lich used them to skin the hulls of his new kayaks." "We've avoided such a fate for now," Blaze said. "The even better news is we've successfully reduced his army by one." Aira walked a half-circle around Dante, looking him up and down. "You look fine. A little gross, like you've been sick, but fine. I can see with my own eyes that it worked. So I'll skip right to the meaningful questions. How did it work? Did you have to do anything different because he was a Lich?" Blaze nodded. "I had to not screw everything up, which was a challenging change of pace. Otherwise, it was the exact same de-blighting process Beck said it would be." Her look of curiosity shifted to an unwanted awareness. "Where is Beck? Something's happened to him, hasn't it?" "The White Lich and I worked out a way to break past the Odosein," Dante said. "When the three of them came to free me, Beck locked me away from the Nether, but only for a moment. I let them get comfortable, and believe I was no harm. And then I struck him."
"And you killed him?"
"I'm sorry, Bel Aira. I was under the Lich's power."
"You don't say."
"Idiot that I am, I'd completely forgotten that you were a Lich. You weren't yourself. I can still rage at the one controlling you."
"I know exactly how you feel."
Dante curled his hand into a fist, face twisting with an anger Blaze had rarely seen on him. "I will kill him for what he's done, Aira. I swear it on my life." She moved a step closer, examining his face.
"I think, at last, you might."
Where is Naren? Blaze said. And how is Volo?
Naren's asleep. He's an early riser, that one. Likes to beat the sun to rise and help us in the gardens. As for the girl, she's seen no change in her condition. I'm starting to doubt she ever will. During the fighting in Aerososis, she saw into the depths of the abyss, and it destroyed her. There's something missing inside her now. A spark. A light. I don't think it can be brought back.
Blaze had suspected this for some time, but hearing the words from someone else shot a pang of sorrow down his spine.
What do we do then? Leave her here?
We can't travel with her, Dante said. We need all the speed we can get. If anything, she'll be in more danger with us.
Era nodded to the wasteland surrounding them.
If she stays here much longer, she'll be afflicted with the same thing the rest of us are. She'll never be able to leave.
Blaze crossed his arms.
But traveling is her life. It's all she's ever done.
If she gets stuck here, and comes back to her senses later, we'll do everything we can to free her, Dante said. But it might be for the best. If the White Lich defeats us, this is one of the last places he'll come to.
Impressive rationalization, Era said. How are you going to come at the Lich next, anyway?
If he's discovered a way around the Ordo Syene, how will you get near him without getting slaughtered?
I'm not sure yet. With any luck, we'll figure that out along the way.
You're going to head for the Aedan Rane without any idea how you're going to attack him? Remind me why I ever agreed to train you.
We aren't going after the Lich, Dante said slowly. We're leaving to Naretain.
She blinked, knocked off kilter for the first time in the conversation.
What are you talking about?
The Lich and the Monsoon are on the verge of sowing up the entire country. Another few days and it'll all be theirs. We can't operate a resistance under those conditions. Our only choice is to withdraw, regroup, and put together a force capable of meeting them in the field.
And leave my country to be devoured, to be murdered and converted into his servants? How can you condemn us to this fate when you just suffered it yourself?
Because it's the only way to win. No. She advanced on him,
eyes locked on his. You will not leave.
I forbid it.
How are you going to stop us, Era? By using the Odyssean to hold me down until I agree to do your bidding?
If that's what it takes.
Then you'll fail, because I know how to break the Odyssean too. She flashed her teeth in rage, cheeks mottled red.
Then I renounce my protection of you, and I renounce you. Be gone and be damned.
She turned on her heel and strode back to her tower. Dante watched her stride away, robes streaming behind her. He was tempted to find Naren, remount the Lon Harbor, and put the entire stupid place behind him. But the anger that had been simmering within him since being released from the White Lich's thrall boiled over. Before he knew what he was doing, he was running across the plaza. Era entered her tower, slamming the door behind her. Dante was prepared to knock the door from its hinges, but it was unlocked. He crossed to the stairwell. Her sandals smacked the treads. He ascended after her, his steps as noisy as hers, but she paid them no mind. He exited the stairwell into the hallway where she kept her quarters, just as she was clapping her door shut behind her. He flung it open. She whirled about. The room was so dark her face was little more than shadows, but her eyes burned like forges.
"How dare you?"
Dante crossed to her, jabbing his finger at her face. "We've done nothing but struggle for this land. And you're an utter failure, aren't you? So get out before you mess something else up. I order you. And I defy you. What are you going to do about it?" Face pinched with rage, she lowered her chin. Chains of golden flecks coalesced in a halo above her head. She lashed him with them, ripping the nether away from him. He smiled and envisioned the forest that had once grown across the hell-painted hills. The vision was fleeting and only produced a few flecks of stream. But that was all he needed. He picked them up, seeking their connections to all of the other shadows. Her bonds shattered. "Do you see what I can do?" He gestured east, toward the swamps. "He can do exactly the same. That's why we have to fall back. I've already heard you dribble out your stupidities. So you must be here to convince yourself of them, not me. Because I know that you promised to preserve my country, and instead you're forsaking it." "I've done everything I can. I've bled for it, lost friends for it. I almost lost my soul for it, Era. We can't fight him here anymore." "Have you thought through what this means? Without flinching, without grabbing at every hope you wish to be true while blinding yourself to every flaw that would hurt you?"
"Yes," Dante said. "Over the next few weeks, if not days, the last free Tenarians will be captured, conquered by the righteous monsoon, or converted into blighted by the Aedan Rane. At best, the Lich will leave the monsoon to rule themselves as they've been doing, stamping out your ways and replacing them with the unquestioning conformity of their belief. At worst, the Lich will turn on them and blind them as his mindless and half-human soldiers. Either way, the Tanara Tain you know will perish."
"That's exactly what will happen."
Her voice went husky. "Most of my people will be blighted. They won't even be able to speak. Most of those who aren't blighted will be monsoon loyalists who want to destroy everything we've stood for. Only a few of the few will remember the culture we once stood for. But anyone who speaks up about it will be put to death by the monsoon. For those who remain silent, our ways will die with them. And that will be the end. Not even the outsiders will remember us, because we didn't let them know us. Even if there comes a day when you cut out the Aedan Rane's heart and burn it to ashes, that won't undo our fate. Tanara Tain is dead."
"You could be right. But you're forgetting something."
"What?"
"That you will have known us. And can tell our story for us after we're gone."
"You don't know us at all, outsider. Even if you mean well, the story you tell of us will be no more than a shadow of what we were. Better to tell no story at all."
I won't have to tell your story for you. Tenarians are still alive right now in Bressel. I will find the chink in the lich's eye.